kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, The Corporate State of Surveillance, a commentary by Ralph Nader from Counterpunch. From the environmental segment, a Texas-sized island of Japanese debris to hit the west coast of North America. Where's this come from? The tsunami in 2011. That's an awful lot of debris. Radioactive debris as well. I'll deal with that. Then, if time permits, an in-depth analysis of what's wrong with Obamacare that everyone's missing, from Kevin Zees and Margaret Flowers from Truthout, the biggest insurance scam in history. My guest in the second part of our program will be Dr. Mary Maxwell. Dr. Maxwell is an independent journalist, an attorney. She is going to talk about looking at suppressed cures for cancer, their legal status, and the industrial cancer industry. I'll be talking about some of the cures that I have investigated over my career and sharing some insights on the doctors who are harassed, including a unique meeting that I happened to have that was arranged by the former head of publicity for the American Cancer Society. And in that meeting, I saw all that I would ever need to know about how absolutely vile the entire cancer establishment is from top to bottom. Then, as a part of that, I'll be discussing an article from Prevent Disease, David Milhavik, on what the cancer industry does not want you to know about chemotherapy and radiation. Additionally, today, I'm going to read a short piece in The Guardian on the transatlantic trade deal and how it is an absolute assault upon democracy. Now, I'm quite sure that most people, not even in this audience, which is very well informed, has heard of investor-state dispute settlements. So please write this down. This is quite simply the destruction of all unions, the destruction of all of our laws, literally shredding the Constitution. It is called the investor-state dispute settlement. And I'll go into depth on it today and show you how Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and all the corporate Democrats and Obama, how they've all been behind this. At the same time, they're saying how they want to help Americans. Well, this shows otherwise. Let's begin. There are cells in the retina, and these are called ganglion cells. And what we find is that the death of the retinal ganglion cells is a hallmark of many optic neurodegenerative diseases like glaucoma and retinopathy. Well, according to the Chinese Academy of Sciences, the number one reason is oxidative stress. I'm quite sure you have witnessed what I did growing up. Where I grew up, every single person I knew smoked cigarettes, and lots of them. Everyone had those yellow-stained fingers, and their breath smelled terrible. But I also noticed that they always had bloodshot eyes or yellow in the eyes, and little veins breaking, same way around the nose. That's caused by oxidative stress. Now, we know that our diet can create oxidative stress. Being under stress can create oxidative stress. Athletics creates oxidative stress, so you have to counterbalance that. And eating meat, sugar, these are all oxidative stresses. Well, that leads to major causes of cell death. Now, according to Neural Regenerative Research, Volume 8, a peer-reviewed journal, something as simple as a tiny little grape seed can protect the retinal ganglion cells against oxidative stress-induced programmed cell death, what is called apoptosis. And this was done at the Chinese Academy of Sciences by a Dr. Liu. And what they found was by giving a diet rich in grape seed extract. Now, that's really easy. Now, I know many of you are getting grape seed extract because I know that many of you are big believers in eating grapes, blue grapes, black grapes, purple grapes. The seed is very important. Many people like the seedless. Always chew up the seed or throw it into a blender. And the grape skin. In fact, the grape skin and the grape seed have the vast majority of nutritional value from the grape. Now, if you can't eat them, let's say you have dentures or you have don't have teeth, then you'll want to get the juice. Now, when they're making the juice, the organic, like a organic Concord grape juice, which is really good, they press all of the grapes together, and that means that the anthocyanidins that are in the seed and the skin come into the juice. So that would be good also. So anyhow, let's start eating more grapes, drinking more grape juice, and taking grape seed extract and grape skin extract. And of course, it's also from the grapes that we get the nutrient naturally occurring called the resveratrol. So it can help your eyes, it can help prevent blindness, and that's a good thing to prevent that. I always like to find common fruits and vegetables that can boost our heart health. And according to a new study, there is a simple nutrient that can make a big difference. And we know about this nutrient simply because it's been used for a long time to help eliminate urinary tract infections. I'm talking about the cranberry. Cranberries are your number one go-to source. Right behind that, of course, I would always use a wild oregano oil with that and Manuka honey. The three together with vitamin C help destroy bacteria or their ability to attach to linings. But what about the heart? Well, new research shows that cranberries and the juice of cranberries helps your heart become more flexible. And therefore, you get better dilation instead of obstruction of blood flow. And if the blood can flow through your arteries easier, and if there's no obstructions, then you help reduce your blood pressure and the capacity for clotting, which can lead to an ischemic or heart attack or stroke episode. This latest research shows us the phytonutrients in cranberries, known as proanthocyanidins, and are what are called PACs, P-A-C. And they, in effect, open up the channel, allowing the blood to flow. Now, they don't actually kill bacteria, or they don't really eliminate cholesterol. They simply allow bacteria or plaque debris to collect in the urinary tract and where it can be expelled. So if you want to have healthier heart, better cholesterol, then cranberry juice, that's good. Cranberry powder, that's better because it's more concentrated, and I would use that every day. First time I had a soursop was in Jamaica. I had just gone down with six members of our Natural Living Running Walking Club, including Sam Skinner, and we were going to run the Jamaica Marathon. Now, this was the first Jamaica Marathon. Now, I've been to Jamaica many times. I think it's one of the most beautiful islands in the world, and especially where I like to go, which is up in the Blue Mountains or into the middle of the country. I'm not keen on the shore. Yes, you have Negril, Montego Bay, but you have up and down country. You have wonderful food, and so I'm thinking this is going to be an exciting marathon. Turns out to be the worst marathon I've ever done, or anyone else that raced it. And they got it started very late, and it was very hot, and they hadn't planned it well because the lead runners used up all the water in the first few miles, so there was literally no water for 18 miles. They hadn't anticipated this was during the rainy season, so instead of taking us to where the elevation was level, we'd go down into these towns, and there'd be a flooding. And I remember sloshing clear up to my knees in water. Rats coming by. It was a mess. And, oh, they forgot to tell the traffic, we have a marathon. Don't drive on the roads. So it was like dodge 'em cars. You had to keep yelling at people because they kept coming up beside the runners. That was the first and only time I believe they ever did a marathon. In any case, all of us went. We finished, and in fact, there's a photograph up on the website, GaryNoll.com. You'll see Sam Skinner and I completely exhausted. Now, both of our legs are white, and it really stands out in Sam because he's an African-American. Well, what you're seeing is salt. That's salt from the body. That's how dehydrated we were. And because the temperature's around 100 degrees, it was 100% humidity. But we both won gold medals. We both brought back gold from the Jamaica Marathon. And two of the other members that went with us also did very well medaled. But it was what happened afterwards. Because you have to be very careful. You don't ever eat anything you're not familiar with before a marathon because you don't know how your body will handle it. Especially when you're in a foreign country. You don't want the bacteria in their water or their food to adversely affect your intestine. Which, by the way, has happened. I saw it happen many times, marathons. So this person says, you finished the marathon? I said, yeah. Well, how about some fruit? I said, all right. I said, but do this. Don't cut it. I'll cut the fruit. Just bring us some gallons of water and all the fruit you can get. So this person comes back with this huge platter. I'm talking about like 3 foot around. And it was stacked like a crown of fruit. And the dominant fruit, they tend to have small watermelon, about the size of a football. And some fruit I'd never seen before, never tried. But the one that I found most intriguing, they called a vanilla custard. Others called it sour sop, sour, S-O-U-R-S-O-P. And I started to eat that, and I had just never tasted anything like that. It was so exotic and sweet and creamy. So in the United States, we call it a cherimoya. I grow them. I have a tree of cherimoya, and I make sure that the netting is over that tree because I don't want the birds getting before I have a chance to try some. So if you've never had soursop, it's delectable, but it's also extremely powerful. And down there, I had a chance to interview some of what are called the bush doctors. These are people not always trained in classic medicine, but one is. And was a friend of mine on the island, the only holistic doctor in Jamaica. And he said that he uses soursop for cancer patients. Now, he didn't have any studies to verify its efficacy, but he said his own experience was that when he's giving his patients who have cancer different ingredients, he keeps it about a week apart for each one. He doesn't give a bunch all at once to see what effect it has. And he said every time he gives soursop, he sees a big improvement in people with cancer. Well, that was years ago. Here's the latest. This is from the Cancer Research United Kingdom. And what they have found is that the soursop is, quote, 100 times, that's 10,000% stronger at killing cancer than chemotherapy. This is in Citizens Column, quote, soursop fruit 100 times stronger at killing cancer than chemotherapy. It's just amazing. What they have found in all over the world. The tree is low, and it in different countries is called something different. In English, it's called soursop. It's a very large subacid, sweet white pulp. They just scoop it out and eat it, and they put it into drinks. And in Brazil, I would get soursop drinks where they actually juice it. And they would take like 6 soursop to make one big glass of juice, and they use it every day. It originated from deep inside the Amazon rainforest. It grows wild, and it is one of the strongest things you can do for a weakened immune system. It also helps you avoid deadly infections. And there, they use it for cancer, infections, you name it. It can kill malignant cancer cells in all types of cancer, including colon cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, lung and pancreatic cancer. And it was stronger even than the chemotherapy adriamycin. So, that's good to know, because I know we have people in the audience who have cancer. Always want to keep you up to date on the best things. Now, let's say that you just want to protect yourself against radiation, or maybe you're going to have an x-ray for some reason, and you want to know, what can I do to help minimize the damage from radiation? Or let's say, like some of the people who were listening heard my report about how radiation in seaweed and fish is now impacting not just Japan, but the whole Pacific, and including the islands of Hawaii. It's a whole chain of islands. I have some people who listen to this audience, who live in Hawaii, and they say, what can we do to neutralize some of the effects? Well, there's some simple things we can do. One of the things we can use is turmeric. And of all the different nutrients I know, it has one of the finest and strongest anti-cancer qualities of anything on earth. So if you're having chemotherapy and you're having really devastating side effects from the radiation, then turmeric can make the difference. If you want to help prevent your cells from becoming damaged and abnormal, then again, turmeric. Now, turmeric contains curcumin, and curcumin and curcuminoids are really able to inhibit cancer and of the head and neck and squamous cell carcinoma. Also, curcumin inhibits proliferation of cancer. That's according to the International Journal of Cancer. And so it would be one of my top selections. Also, the oral consumption daily of spirulina. Spire, S-P-I-R-U-L-I-N-A, U-L-I-N-A. It enhances anti-tumor natural killer cells. And that means your body's better able to, with its own natural killer cells, to respond to any cell that's under attack from a virus or tumor formation. And they can recognize viruses and tumors in the absence of antibodies and signal molecules to make them a potent innate immune system defender. The NT cells, that's what natural killer cells are designated, also are great at communicating, regulating interactions with macrophages and other endothelial T cells. So spirulina, this algae, eliminates tumors by exciting natural killer cell response. And in fact, there was a study from the Department of Microbiology and Immunology at the University of Japan. So have your spirulina. 1 teaspoon a day should do it. Now, that's the latest on health and healing. I want to share a few more things before we take our break. This is in The Guardian. It's about a treaty along with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is the Trans-Atlantic Treaty. Both are terrible. Both will destroy the system of checks and balances and all of our protections at the federal, state, and local level. And why? How does it work? Well, because what they're trying to do with the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership is they want to remove virtually all regulatory differences between the United States and European unions. And the remarkability, it would grant big businesses to sue the governments of any country in the world which actually try to defend their citizens. Now, here's how it works, and here's what's important. It would allow a secretive panel of corporate selected lawyers to overrule the will of Parliament in Great Britain and our Congress or Supreme Court in the United States, and literally destroy every single legal protection that we have. And yet, have you heard anything about this? Has anyone in the American media discussed this in any depth at all? Any member of Congress? No. They haven't, and they're not going to. And why is it bad? Because what is known as the investor-state dispute settlement, Again, this is the evil part of this. It's called the investor-state dispute settlement. And it's already being used in many parts of the world to kill regulations protecting people and the living planet. I'll give you an example. The Australian government, after massive debates in and out of Parliament, decided that cigarettes should be sold in plain packages, marked only with the shocking health warning. The decision was validated by the Supreme Court of Australia, but using a trade agreement Australia struck with Hong Kong, the tobacco company, Philip Morris, has asked an offshore tribunal to award it vast sums in compensation for what they perceive to be lost profits from intellectual property. Now, during its financial crisis and in response to public anger over rocketing charges, Argentina imposed a freeze on people's energy and water bills, and rightly so. If you're in the midst of an economic downturn and the value of your currency has plummeted and your bills have not declined, your water bill, your electric bill, it's only reasonable and humane that a government comes in and says, we're putting a freeze at this moment so you can't raise these people's water or electric bills. That's reasonable. Nothing unreasonable about that. But there's another side to this. It was sued, the country of Argentina was sued by the international utility companies whose vast bills had prompted the government to act. For this and other such actions on behalf of its citizens, Argentina was forced to pay over $1 billion in compensation. In El Salvador, local communities managed at great cost, meaning many people killed, to persuade the government to refuse permission for a vast gold mine which threatened to contaminate their water supplies. A victory for democracy. Good. No. The Canadian company who sought to dig the gold mine is now suing El Salvador for $315 million for the loss of its anticipated future profits. In Canada, the courts revoked two patents owned by the American drug company Eli Lilly on the grounds that the company had not produced enough evidence that they had the beneficial effects it claimed. Eli Lilly is now suing the Canadian government for $500 million and demanding that Canada's patent laws be changed. These companies, along with hundreds of others, are using the investor-state dispute rules embedded in trade treaties signed by the countries they are suing. Now, the rules are enforced by panels, which have none of the safeguards we expect in our own courts. First, all the hearings are held in secret. You can't get any information from anyone. Secondly, the judges, they're corporate hand-picked lawyers, hand-picked by the very corporations that they are part of. And many of them work for companies of the kind whose cases they hear. Citizens and communities affected by their decisions have no legal standing. There is no right of appeal on the merits of the case. Yet they can overthrow the sovereignty of the U.S. Supreme Court, state courts, our Constitution and Bill of Rights. In other words, any law right now in the United States or Great Britain that protects the people or animals or our land or our rivers or lakes, all that can be thrown away because the international treaty is number one, and that's the supreme law of the universe. Therefore, what we thought could protect us won't. And our politicians, both corporate Democrats and corporate Republicans, and all of our presidents, every one of them, clear back to Jimmy Carter, have all signed on to these. So I realize the Democrats, you live in such a hideous place of denialism, arrogance, conceit, and hubris. But maybe one day when you actually wake up and see what you and your candidates and your politicians, your magazines have caused, maybe you'll have some sense of responsibility. Because we're one heartbeat away from having complete and total control of all of our systems given over to international corporations. One Canadian government official speaking about the rules introduced by the North American free trade agreement, NAFTA, remember that's Bill Clinton's pet project, remarked, quote, I've seen the letters from New York and D.C. law firms coming up to the Canadian government on virtually every new environmental regulation and proposition in the last 5 years. They involve dry cleaning chemicals, pharmaceuticals, pesticides, patent law. Virtually all the new initiatives were targeted, and most of them never saw the light of day, end quote. This is the system to which we will be subject if the Transatlantic Treaty goes ahead. The U.S. and European Commission, both of which have been captured by the corporations they are supposed to regulate, are pressing for investor-state dispute resolution to be included in the agreement. And finally, it's so corrupt. The investor-state rules would be used to smash any attempt to save our national health programs, and corporate control would be the dominant. There would be no regulation of banks. There'd be no regulation of energy companies. There'd be no regulation of the fossil fuel industries or what comes out of the ground. They would shut all that down. And there, it's all being done in plain sight. Here's what one of the judges actually said, one of the three panel judges that sits on the tribunals, that his decision can never be appealed. No one has a right to see any of the information that is given to him. Quote, when I wake up at night and I think about arbitration, it never ceases to amaze me that sovereign states have agreed to investment arbitration at all. Three private individuals are entrusted with the power to review, without any restriction or appeal procedure, all actions of the government, all decisions of the courts, and all laws and regulations emanating from Parliament. There are no corresponding rights for citizens. We can't even use these tribunals to demand better protections from corporate greed. So, there you have it. That is important new information. Information that, unfortunately, we're not getting. And we should. I'm Gary Nall, here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. And we're just going to take one quick break and then come back and have a commentary. Then we're going to go to my guest and talk about cancer and suppression of cancer. But I have something brand new for you. If you're watching today's show, and you can go to Ustream channel, just Ustream, U-S-T-R-E-A-M .tv, and then search for Gary Nall, you can see this. This is I'm holding up now in my hand, this big CD package is brand new. First time I've ever mentioning it. It's a set of 10 separate, full, never-before-aired programs on Fascism, Inc., How America's Become a Police State. Now, history may repeat itself, but it never repeats itself identically. And since 9/11, George Bush's launch of the Patriot Act and Barack Obama's signing of the National Defense Authorization Act, the U.S. has rapidly turned its back on the principles of freedom, justice, and liberty engraved in the Constitution. Instead, in praise of militaristic domination, corporate greed and power, and the myth of American exceptionalism, Washington has written a template for the emergence of new fascism and a police state. The merger of government and private industry, eulogized by the fascist dictator Benito Mussolini and documented by the National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden, is being witnessed today in the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, in the taxpayer bailout of Wall Street, and the growing inequality gap between an oligarch or rich 12 million Americans who are rich, 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 and everyone else who is not. So this 10 audio CD series offers exclusive commentaries. I have written and provide 3 hours, interviews with many of the world's most progressive thinkers, historians, journalists, who have the courage to raise their voices against American fascism that increasingly defines the nation's political, economic, and social behavior. Just some of the people. I will be dealing with the Constitution's free zone, civilian communications monitored and seized, the evisceration of free press, how our fascist state extends globally, Professor Sheldon Wolin, the myth of American democracy and the emergence of inverted totalitarianism, Professor John Galtung, the fall of the American Empire, and how we're becoming a neo-fascist state. Chris Hedges, The Demise of True Liberal Values in America. Professor Norman Pollack, The Interpretation of Government and Private Industry and the Failures of Democratic Radicalism in Preventing the U.S. from Descending into Fascism. Andrew Colin, The Conflicts Between State Power and Democracy. Ray McGovern, The CIA Today and Its Role in Domestic Surveillance in Our Emerging Police State and Moral Imperative for Citizens to Become Activists. Professor Henry Giroux, The Role of the Media in Education and the Creation of an Authoritarian Fascist State. Plus, I will have additional commentaries on the Patriot Act, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the privileged few in America who control Homeland Security State. All this, plus the Federal Reserve, the banking system, the financial players behind the scenes. There's never before, that I'm aware of, been one single, altogether, completely up-to-date, incisive understanding of how we've become a police state. I've been working on this for over 4 years. It's interesting, before there was Edward Snowden, before anyone else, I was warning you, we have become a police state. Now, here's the evidence. This 10-hour, 10-part CD set, fully boxed, is yours. Just for, it's normally $150, that's what it'll be when it is offered for sale. I'm offering it to this audience at $75. You can call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or drop by our office at 83rd and Broadway, 877-627-5065. When you work for 4 years on a series, something new, this is the first major series that I've done since my award-winning series, five-part series, and this is a 10-part, five-part series on intervention. In the name of freedom, democracy, what we do around the world. This is brand new. Fascism, Inc., How America is Becoming a Police State. A must listen to. So call now, 877-627-5065. Separately, people always are looking for a very important nutrient that can make enormous difference in their health. Well, right in the top five would be coenzyme Q10. And so I'm offering my 120 milligram soft gel coenzyme Q10, which is quite simply one of the most important nutrients that you can ever take into your body, and it's on sale. It's normally $60. You're paying $35. It's a big savings. Call 877-627-5065 for coenzyme Q10. Also, I've been listening to some of the programs, including Oliver Stone on Democracy Now!. Nothing new, nothing of insightfulness at all. Well, buckle up, because honoring the 50th anniversary of JFK's assassination, we have people coming on you have never heard before with evidence that has never been seen before that will prove who killed Kennedy, how they covered it up, who was involved, their meetings, people in the meetings, 14 people. And that is coming starting next week. Robert Morningstar, give us a call, 646-926-5436. Robert Morningstar, give us a call, 646-926-5436. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. In a few moments, we're going to go to my guest, Dr. Mary Maxwell. Dr. Maxwell is a member of the Lowell Society of South Australia and Friends of Science and Medicine. She has degrees from Johns Hopkins University and University of Adelaide in Australia. And her website is prosecutionfortreason.com. We're going to talk about a look at suppressed cancer cures and their legal status in the industrial cancer industry. However, last night I gave a sneak preview of a major hard-hitting film that won't be out for 6 months. And it was for a small group. I have a few friends that I invite, and I always invite a few members of the audience to let them see and then get their feedback. Here are some of their thoughts about the impact of this film on them.
I felt the film was tragic. It heightened my awareness of exactly how bad the food industry is in this country. I thought I had an understanding of it, but this was so much worse than I thought it was. It makes me question absolutely every piece of food that I put in my mouth, unless I grow it myself. It's going to leave a lasting impression. I am not going to be able to go home and sleep soundly without having this up front and center in my mind for a long time.
I enjoyed the film very much. I learned a lot from it. It really shocked me. I'm going to actually go on a Mediterranean diet, which I very much need. Very shocking. Changed my opinion very much, very much. Breathtaking, very knowledgeable, overwhelmingly educational.
I cried in the middle of that film. I just covered my eyes like this so nobody would see me, and I cried. I'm an animal lover, and I have managed to keep myself away from that information. And I know about it. I never watched it because you can't unsee it. It was devastating.
This film is critical to show to Washington and to the whole society. Monumental.
Necessary. Important.
Important for everyone because we all eat.
Just some views from a handful of people from our audience. I have two more important documentaries that I'll be doing. All the rest will be airing in the next 6 months. Quickly from our environmental segment, we have been talking for some time about the debris from the Japanese tsunami. Now there's new information, quote, an enormous floating island of debris from Japan's 2011 tsunami is drifting towards the coast of America, bringing with it over 1 million tons of junk that would cover an area the size of Texas. The most concentrated stretch dubbed the Toxic Monster is currently around 1,700 miles off the coast, sitting between Hawaii and California. Several million tons of additional debris remains scattered across the Pacific. If the rubbish were to continue to fuse, the combined area of the floating junkyard would be greater than that of the United States and would theoretically weigh up to 5 million tons. And the latest statistics come from a report from the U.S. Department of Commerce's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And so now we're seeing it, and it's going to just start hitting. Imagine what's going to happen when that much debris hits the west coast of the United States, and it's radioactive. What's it going to do for tourism? How they're going to clean it up? And yet you don't hear anything about it. Very quickly, one more thing. I didn't have a chance yesterday to continue with our report on the real causes of people's sickness and plagues and the real solutions in this ongoing series based upon the research and scholarship of Roman Bistrinic and Dr. Susanna Humphreys from their important Dissolving Illusions work. I just want to share just 2 minutes on this today, especially about disease food. Now, mind you, today you have a very high risk of eating in even some of your top-grade restaurants because of lack of sanitary conditions to the people working there. We also run the risk of eating food that has high bacterial content. And millions, tens of millions of people suffer from food poisoning each year in the United States. Thousands die. Now imagine when there was no inspections, no refrigerators. So you had no idea how old something was. The limited sources of food consumed by the population were often of poor quality or contaminated. and a lack of laws and enforced laws and a systematic corrupt food supply chain led to abysmal health situation for those eating diseased food. And attempts to improve the situation were almost always opposed by the individuals and businesses engaged in the offenses because it impacted their bottom line. In Chicago and New York City, milk was of such poor quality that it caused the death of thousands of children every year. Quote, milk sold in Chicago came from cows fed on whiskey slops with their bodies covered with sores and tails all eaten off, end quote, a circumstance which enabled the editorial critic to explain, quote, why so many children die in Chicago. New York's milk supply was also largely by byproducts of the local distilleries, and the milk dealers were charged with serious offenses of murdering annually 8,000 children. But no one was found guilty. Cows shut up without proper exercise or pure air. The milk is necessarily diseased and is the cause of extensive mortality among young children and infants. Besides the unhealthy slops, decayed vegetables, and the sour and putrid offal and remnants of kitchens are gathered up for food by these animals, the consequences of which is a lot they become diseased, end quote. Now, in 1860 England, city inspectors attempted to control the sale and use of diseased meats. To avoid financial losses, diseased meat was made into sausages, pickled and cured for ham and bacon, to be sold to an unsuspecting public. Meat that was too diseased for even sausages was fed to the pigs, which, by the way, were later then eaten by the humans. Quote, the dead meat markets are contaminated by the carcasses of diseased animals from all sources. In the city markets alone, inspection size from 1 to 2 tons of diseased meat every week, and similar seizures, but to a less extent, are made in butcher shops and slaughterhouses outside the city by medical officers of health and their assistants. In Edinburgh, England, Mr. Gangi tells me that 200 diseased cattle are sold in the dead meat market every week, carcasses being smuggled in at night, even from adjoining piggeries. In this way, the best butchers, in ignorance, may and do serve diseased meat to the wealthiest in the land. Pigs are largely fed upon diseased meat, which is too far gone even for the sausage maker, and this is saying a great deal. And as a universal rule, diseased pigs are pickled and cured for bacon and ham, end quote. People often consume nutrient-deficient diets and contaminated food that left them weak and susceptible to disease. In 1865, a report talks about the deplorable state of food in the city of New York. Decayed and diseased foods were often sold to the working classes, which left them in a weakened physical condition. Quote, the quality of the food sold at the corner and butcher shops in this neighborhood deserves a more extended notice than it can receive here. A casual examination shows much of it to be unfit for human subsistence. Unwholesome meat, particularly slunk veal, which is the flesh from the fetus of a calf found during the slaughter of its mother, is constantly vended and consumed. Piles of pickled herrings are exposed in the air till the mass approaches a condition of putrefaction, and the slimy food with wilted and decayed vegetables, sausages, not above suspicion, and horrible pies, composed of stale and unripe fruits and mold, whose digestion no human stomach could accomplish, all find ready purchasers. These decaying animals and vegetables remains are daily entombed in the stomachs of thousands of children whose pallid, expressionless faces and shrunken limbs are the familiar attributes of childhood in these localities. In conclusion, the glimpse we have just taken of the underside of Western culture in the 1800s and into the 1900s is never discussed in terms of the medical issues and diseases of that notoriously sickened era. Yet those were the most important aspects of susceptibility and spread of illness. It was not until the adults who suffered these awful conditions, frequently children lived an unthinkable existence too. Their lives were often beset only with pitiful living conditions and disease, rotten food, long hours of arduous and demoralizing labor, all of which took an enormous toll on their immunity. On our next program tomorrow, Suffer the Little Children. Now I'll get into another reason why we had so much disease. The kids were being put to work 4, 5, 6 years of age, and were working frequently 14 hours, 16 hours a day. None of this is ever attributed to the causes of major diseases. Instead, they just promote the vaccine as the cure. I'm Gary Noll. Let's say hello to Dr. Mary Maxwell, who's standing by now. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you very much, Gary. I want to say I'm not a doctor of that kind. I have a law degree and a PhD in politics. And my new book, which is called Consider the Lilies, a review of 18 cures for cancer and their legal status, is really an investigation of why these particular cures that ranged from about the year 1890 right up to the present, why they get kicked out usually by the American Cancer Society, which puts out a ruling sort of saying unapproved method. How did these excellent cures tend to disappear? And I think I'll take the opportunity to twist the terminology around a little bit, and instead of saying that my book is about alternative cancer cures, I feel it is not. It's very orthodox medicine. I would say instead that James Ewing, who was the guy who introduced radiation therapy, I believe around 1913 or so, by 1919 he had the textbook going for that field, and after that everyone looked to him as the sort of oncologist. He was actually a pathologist, but he was one of the founders of Sloan Kettering and the American Cancer Society, and I guess he and his cohort made it their business to not allow the continuation of other normal medical cures. And when I was writing this book up, I chose 18. It could have been more. I mean, there's at least 30 cures out there. But these are 30 that are done in medical journals of their day and that were, you know, carrying out normal scientific research and proper tests on patients, and that had excellent rates of cure, and especially they had excellent rates, by which I mean more than 50%, where the person was in a very late stage of cancer and walked away happy and walked away cured. So you just don't see that in the what is considered the orthodox medicine. I consider all of this to be orthodox, and you might say I was even aiming for snob appeal when I chose. Of my 18, 12 of them have the letters MD after their name. So let me just read you those 12 names, not that I want to discriminate against the other six. They were serious researchers also. But just to show you that you can be a proper MD carrying out your cancer cure and still have your name sort of disappeared from history. In the 1890s, there was Coley. He would inject a patient with live bacteria, and then that would somehow trigger their immune system to grab the cancer as well. In the 1920s, Glover was administering a serum, which he had cultured from the cancer patient's blood or urine, and that was a standard way to deal with other diseases at that time, and still is for some other diseases. In the 1940s, Robert Lincoln had his patients inhale an infection. There's an interesting photo of that. He has them wearing a mask, and they're supposed to breathe in these bacteria, and that, he said, would stimulate macrophages, which are a normal part of our beautiful body that patrols around to discover invaders, and that it too would grab cancer. Though in most of these cases, the doctors weren't just focusing on cancer. They used these treatments for a range of things. And the Lincoln affair led to a congressional hearing that you might want to read called the Fitzgerald Report, dated around 1953, which is a real shocker because there were the patients giving their reports and there was Congress saying, why aren't we using this stuff? And then it sort of all went under the table. Then in the 1950s, Gerson was using nutrition to build the immune system. In the 1960s, Olney was using, he called it sterilization of blood. And to find out more on that, you can just go to the website of the patents of the U.S. and look up the various patents held by Dr. Edelson of Yale. You'll get a clue as to how this, why this helps of cancer or other things to sterilize one's blood. Then, of course, there's Dear Rivici, who was using lipids to strengthen the cell wall. I believe he had his medical license snatched away when he was about 85 years old. Then we have Livingston, Virginia, and she would give antibiotics to her patients, sometimes do a full blood transfusion, and she had a vaccine that she made. I think she copied this from Gerlach in the 1930s, doesn't matter. It worked, and today there is some doctor or some pharmacist who can make up those vaccines that she was using. I forget his name, but on the website of Ed Addeo, A-D-D-E-O, that guy's name is listed. And then in the 90s, Brzezinski, who was using something to turn off the gene switch that stops the out-of-control division of cells. And finally, in the 2000s, to give the final number of doctors here, I added in Hamer, who's a psychiatrist, claims 100% success rate with his cure, and it's just based on dealing as a psychiatrist with traumas that may have caused the person to develop the cancer. That's my list of 9. I said there were 12, but I'm not going to mention 3 who were also eminent people in their day. George Crile and Robert Becker were surgeons. They only got as far as to do animal cancer cures. They didn't proceed to humans. And also, Michalakis in Canada today says that his DCA cure, dichloroacetate, whatever that is, works well on animal cancer, and he has not yet got to the stage of human tests. So leaving aside those, there were still those other 9 who were, I would say, carrying on good medicine. And then you'd have to say, why did they get squelched? Well, obviously, it must have been done from a very high level of what I call the big boys, or even the big, big boys, because they were able to get at 50 state legislatures. Most of this suppression of doctors' work occurs through either the AMA branch of a state or through the legislature. And Dr. Robert Rowan says on his website that even today in California, it is a crime if a doctor tries out a method other than the big 3, you know, the approved surgery, chemo, and radiation, tries something else, even if the patient is delighted and cured, that doesn't say that that doctor has not committed the crime of using the wrong medication. So all of that is, so invasive of the doctor's territory. And I want to come across not as a historian who says, oh, isn't this all interesting? I want it to be known that I'm very angry about this stuff, and that the crime that is being committed is being committed by the big boys who are going against our health. And probably all your listeners know the book by Charlotte Isserbeet called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, which is her study of all the curriculum in the last, for grades 1 through 12, going over a period from the 1930s till now, where she was able to show that it wasn't local control, it really was national control, with the aim of making kids dumber. And I'm saying that my big boys, whatever they were doing, were making people sicker. Surely you would ask, why would anyone engage in such a twisted thing? And even their own children must, get the effects of it. So it's very peculiar. But my theory is those guys at the top are so worried that they will be challenged from below. Just like in the animal kingdom, you've got the alpha sitting at the top, and he knows his days are limited. And I think that our top boys have to go through these peculiar and really sick procedures just to make sure that they don't fall. And what they might fall into is our punishing them. So all I can think of to say is either find a way to negotiate with them or, in fact, punish them. And I have what I call in my book the Mary Maxwell cure that costs $350. By the way, my book costs about $10 on Amazon. But the cure is $350 plus $5.75 postage. And what is that for? That is the fee that you need to file without a lawyer and go into any federal district courthouse, and you can file a RICO civil suit against these characters. You can't attempt to prosecute them. You have to show that they have caused, it's like a tort claim. So you say that what they've done is costing you something economically. Of course, if it's costing you extra taxi fare to have to go to the doctor, that would do, because all you have to do is prove some economic loss. Meanwhile, you can name these, criminals. And what is the crime? Well, many crimes, but obviously if they're hurting your health, that's an assault. But I wouldn't hesitate to say the crime is treason, which brings me to my other book published 2 years ago by Trindade Press. It's called Prosecution for Treason. And you would be perhaps surprised to know that in the United States Constitution, there is easy provision for getting people who commit this crime, in that the definition stated, and this was from the founders of the country back in 1787, they said, if someone is levying war against the United States, but that doesn't have to mean they're running in with an army and tanks and levying war. There are other bits of jurisprudence that show that levying a war would be taking any, physical violent action against the citizens. Well, if you're preventing a cancer patient from getting a cure, I have no hesitation to say that that is doing violence against them. So we ought to stop being so shy or, what you might say, careful about, oh, yes, well, they wrote up in the journals that it was a bad cure, but they didn't really do anything. Yes, they did. They kept those 18 folks off the, unavailable to us for a cure. And, by the way, I want to say something about what I consider heroes of this. All those 12 persons that I mentioned and the other six and more are heroes. And someone told me that you were once in touch with Helen Coley Knotts, and I think she's a real hero because her father was that first guy that I mentioned, Coley, who gave a certain cure, and probably he was willing that it go by the way, and he was doing other things. But once he died and his daughter looked through his papers, she found reports of his patients who had come out well from cancer, and she was determined to bring back into life his work. And she tried very hard over many years. I don't think she had much success. But there's an example of heroes. And today in high schools, aren't teachers in need of giving us heroes? Well, there's many doctors who were determined to try their best in spite of being persecuted and shamed. And one thing I noticed that I wish if my husband were still alive, he was a doctor who must have read all the journals during the years and just lightly listened to and paid it and believed in the report that such and such a method was unapproved. If he actually charted them out the way I did, comparing them all, he would see that those reports by the American Cancer Society often consisted of just some sort of a put-down remark about the person himself or accusing him of doing some other thing that is irrelevant to his cure, and they never went through the
Mary, let me give you just one example because we're coming up to the end of the program. There are many other people I would have put on the list besides the ones you, and I have no problem with any of the ones you have, but to me the real heroes were the people who, like Max Gerson, who took his 50 best terminal cancer patients that were reversed, and we also have, you have Joseph Issels, Dr. Burton with his, and these were not animal studies. They had good quality clinical studies. They jumped through all the hoops. I was invited by Pat McGrady Sr., the head of for 25 years of the American Cancer Society, to have a sit-down conversation with the man who handled the unproven methods of cancer management list, the blacklist. If you were on that blacklist, you were persona non grata. And as I'm sitting there and I ask him, first, what constitutes quackery? What constitutes a method of cancer treatment that you would not find legitimate? And, well, they don't have a legitimate medical degree or not a legitimate PhD. They have secret formulas that they've never shared with anyone. They never present before scientific groups. They don't publish in peer-reviewed literature. They charge exorbitant amounts of money. And he went through this list. I said, good, I would agree with that. Now, here are five individuals that you have on the list. All of these are come from traditional orthodox backgrounds. They all published in peer-reviewed literature. None of them made any money from their therapies. None of it was secret. They presented before groups of individuals, including Lex Denisov Brzezinski, before that he was funded by the Damon Runyon Fund and the National Health Service. This is all based upon good science. So show me where a single point would disqualify any of these people, let alone having to meet, I think, 13. They don't meet one. And he looks at me, and then he realizes that, you know, that this wasn't going to be a friendly conversation with a compliant journalist, the ones you get from the New York Times or New York Post. And I said, I've looked up these people's background. Here is the resume. Here's the background of each one of these people you have on your list. None of them qualify for being excluded or discriminated against. And he said, well, that's just the way it is. I said, well, by what measure did you criticize these people? And all he had was a gossip column, something like the National Enquirer from some European publication, some rag, showing that these people weren't credible. He had no science. He had never interviewed these people. He had never read their work. He was unfamiliar with them, and yet they were on his list. So that told me everything I needed to know. When I came out of the meeting, Pat McGrady Sr. said, now you know that everything in the world of cancer is politics. And I'm sick of it. I'm at the end of my career. I'm probably at the end of my life. I needed to tell someone, I'm telling you. So I was given this information, and that propelled me to write the first articles in the United States National Magazines on the politics of cancer, 1976, 77. Did a whole group, end up being 28 cover stories. It was all about the politics, not about helping people with cancer. We're out of time. Thank you for your important contribution, and I'm sure many people are going to want to continue this exploration and see what you have to say about each one of these important contributors to alternative approaches to cancer. The book is Consider the Lilies, a review of 18 cancer cures for cancer and their legal status. The website is prosecutionfortreason.com. The author is Dr. Mary Maxwell. She has a doctor of jurisprudence in law, plus she's a PhD and a graduate of Johns Hopkins University. Thank you very much. And I want to thank all you for listening. Now let's go over and say hello to Eutrice Leet. Hi, Eutrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we return to our discussion, our continuing discussion on Haiti. In this edition, we look at the anomaly that Haiti is, the poorest nation in the hemisphere, yet exceedingly rich in oil, gold, and other mineral deposits.
I've interviewed many people in Haiti, and the consensus of all my interviews is that the Clintons and their acolytes go in there with big flashy NGOs claiming that they're going to bring millions of, you know, jobs and or not millions, but thousands of jobs. All they do is get money that never gets to the average Haitian, that goes to the special interest groups, multinational corporate interests, and that they can spend millions upon new hotels and mining interests, manufacturing interests. And yet the American media, especially the New York Times and the Washington Post and all the other publications and news media, refuse to ever show a light, to actually go down there and independent of the Clinton. I think everyone in America must fear the Clintons in the media because no one tells the truth about these clowns. I'd like for you to address that if you would.
In fact, our journalist guide, Kim Ives, is very much on top of that very slant on the subject.
Great. So you'll be dealing with that, right?
Yes, we will.
Okay.
We'll be talking about it.
All right. So we're going to have that right now, an honest, thorough look at the reality of Haiti today with Eutrice Leet.